And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
December the 12th, 2021 was a very special moment for the Concordia Christian Church in Mozambique, the ICCM, as it was the graduation day for 15 new Lutheran pastors. In 2015, there was only 10 congregations and around 1,000 baptized members. In 2021, 6 years later, thanks to the good Lord, there are 120 congregations and 42,000 baptized members, according to the latest statistics. There were and there are huge challenges, but added to God's rich and endless blessings, the challenges seem smaller than they really are. God has been working powerfully in Mozambique through the preaching of the word and the Lutheran model of living the faith under God's grace. The newly ordained pastors have had a continuous process of theological studies and orientation, guided by pastors Carlos Winterly and Andre B. Plamer, who encouraged them through theory and practical examples how it is necessary to always place one's hope in God's grace. As a result, the students from the very beginning of their studies were already helping the ordained pastors to spread the gospel. Many completely took over pastoral duties in their own congregations during their training. There is now a Lutheran church in Maputo, the capital city, which is more than 1,500 kilometers away from the church headquarters. In the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Brazil, the IELB, and in the partner churches and mission societies, there has been great involvement and commitment to support this mission. People have been awakened, and many, besides their offerings in the local congregations, have supported the mission in Mozambique. Psalm 133:1 always reminds us how good and pleasant it is for God's people to live together as brothers and sisters. The IELB, also through the Concordia Seminary in Brazil, has supported this work. The partnership with the ICCM has borne much fruit. Mozambique is the mission work of the Lutheran Church that has been the most expressive and visible work in the world today. The challenges are still enormous in a country that was devastated by civil war and still has not overcome misery and is often ravaged by cyclones that devastate and cause the death of several people due to famine and disease. Mozambique currently has 21 ordained pastors, and in the years to come this number can increase because many of the country's 30 million inhabitants still do not know the word of God. Also, in just a few years, thousands of people, men, women and children, have lost their lives, many being beheaded in public squares because of religious persecution caused by Islamic extremists in the north of the country. All those who do not want to follow the rule of Islam are persecuted or killed. Please encourage these new pastors in their work with your prayers and your offerings. The Reverend George Samietz represented the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England as chairman of the ELCE at the Churches Together in England Forum, the broadest ecumenical gathering in the country, which ended on the 16th of March with a renewed commitment that the Church is ready to serve a broken world. More than 300 delegates from CTE's 52 national member churches, bodies and association and partner organisations met to discuss the theme Reconciling Hope, a Broken Church for a Broken World, viewed through the lenses of racial justice and the climate emergency. CTE President, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, spoke on reconciliation in a post-COVID world. He urged the church to embrace its diversity and, where we disagree, we must learn to disagree. Well, look outwards and respond to the crises that surround us with the love of God that is within us and with the unity that can be reached between us. Tear Fund Global Advocacy and Influencing Director Canon Dr. Ruth Valerio addressed the question of reconciliation with the earth. She said facing the climate emergency is an integral part of the Christian faith. We need to get hold of God's love for the world. In Genesis 1:31, God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. Professor Anthony Reddy and Reverend Dr. Tessa Henry Robinson spoke on reconciling communities. Professor Reddy demanded that the church confront its collusion with the horrors of the transatlantic slave trade. Dr. Henry Robinson challenged individuals to think where they had found themselves, as oppressors or following Jesus' way of justice, hope and peace. Orthodox theologian Dr. Ralph Lee reminded delegates that, as we seek to understand one another better, deep listening helps us to overcome the difference in our language and traditions. During the gathering, the forum attendees made two statements on Ukraine. The first calling for the immediate cessation of hostilities and for churches everywhere to campaign for an end to the war in Ukraine. The second appealing to the UK government to support the churches offering welcome and sanctuary to Ukrainian refugees. As the forum drew to a close, the new General Secretary of Churches Together in England, the Bishop Mike Royal, was commissioned into his role. He addressed the forum with his vision for the church across England. We've got to build a bigger table to gather around and listen to the voices which are often not heard. We need to raise a new generation of ecumenists and to be ready to respond practically and relevantly to the needs of the world that God has called us as a church to serve. Nandu Nathaniel Singh, 48, was reading a chapter from the Bible at a prayer meeting with 25 other Christians when he heard the blood-curdling chants of "Bring the traitor out." A mob of right-wing Hindu activists had gathered outside his home in Jodhpur village, Uttar Pradesh district, in protest against alleged false conversions of Hindus. Among the slogans they were chanting were "Free India of Christian priests," and they were accompanied by the police. Within hours, Mr. Singh and his wife Savita have been arrested and charged with unlawful conversion, criminal intimidation, and intentionally insulting religion. They deny all charges. After being held for 5 months, they were finally released 2 weeks ago. But Christians in India's most populous and politically important state fear that such incidents will become more frequent after the ruling Janata Party BJP expected to win in key local polls due to be announced next Thursday. Some have even warned the historic community may face extermination. Prime Minister Narendra Modi's Hindu Nationalist Party and its allies are expected to secure anywhere up to 277 seats out of 403 in the state, a comfortable majority, according to recent polls. The election is expected to be a barometer for the national political mood amid deepening sectarian divisions. Holding on to Uttar Pradesh, India's most politically important state, would boost Mr. Modi's hopes of winning a third straight-term office in the 2024 general election and bolster his image as the country's most popular politician in decades. It would also be seen as a seal of approval for his Hindu Nationalist Party's unleashed anti-minority stance, including an unofficial crackdown on Christians. A Hindu leader has already threatened us that they are waiting for the election results and after that they will exterminate Christians from Uttar Pradesh, said Emmanuel Singh's eldest son. The return of the BJP to power means more trouble for us. With the BJP in power, the attacks on Christians will increase in the next 5 years, he added. We are worried because they hate our faith, our religion. The BJP government doesn't tolerate any other faith except Hindu. India boasts a 28 million strong Christian community that dates back to 52 AD, but since 2014, when Mr. Modi was first elected, attacks against Christians have spiked. The Alliance Defending Freedom, a Christian non-profit organization based in the United States, has noted a 220% increase since 2014. India was ranked as the 10th most dangerous country in the world for Christians in 2022 by Open Doors International. It was outside the top 30 when Mr. Modi was first elected. One of the most common accusations is that Christians are forcibly converting Hindus with bribes and creating demographic changes, suspicions that led to Singh's arrest, but evidence is usually thin on the ground. These are false allegations. Hundreds of cases have been filed against Christians on charges of false conversion in India, but all of them have been acquitted by the courts, said Akhilesh Edgar, a Christian leader in the central state of Chhattisgarh. Mob justice of the sort the Singhs faced is the usual outcome. Last year alone, there were 486 violent incidents reported by the United Christian Forum, a nationwide volunteer and activist group. By far the highest number of attacks, 66, was reported in Uttar Pradesh, which is ruled by the saffron robe-clad yogi Adityanath, a firebrand Hindu monk known for his hate speech. He has previously said Muslims should have stayed in Pakistan after a petition and accused Mother Teresa of a conspiracy to Christianize India. Under him, public hostility towards minorities, including the northern state's nearly 400,000 Christians, has grown. On Christmas Eve, for example, right-wing Hindu activists attacked a gathering in Agra and burnt an effigy of Santa Claus, while in Varanasi, protesters gathered outside a multi-faith prayer meeting and shouted anti-Christian slogans. In the run-up to the election, there has also been a growing crackdown on priests, who are seen as a key part of the local BJP opposition movement. The idea is to stop them influencing the voting against the ruling BJP, said Emmanuel Singh. Most of the Christians are loyal to opposition leader Akhilesh Yadav and vote against the BJP because of their hatred towards the minorities. Some priests have responded by shifting to online prayers, but for ordinary Christians, it's hard to know what else they can do to stay safe. Just a month ago, 21 Christian families were reportedly forced to flee a village in Uttar Pradesh due to harassment, according to Emmanuel. These attacks are meant to scare minorities and create a division, Emmanuel said. He feared it was a trend that would play out across the country in the coming years. Archaeologists working at Paris's Notre Dame Cathedral have made two exceptional discoveries, including a lead sarcophagus believed to be from the 1300s containing a well-preserved body. The objects, described by the French Culture Ministry as being of remarkable scientific quality, were unearthed during preparatory work for rebuilding the church's famous lead spire, which was destroyed in a massive fire in April 2019. Reconstruction workers were preparing to install scaffolding in the ground to rebuild the 300-foot-tall spire when they stumbled across the items underneath the rubble. During a visit to the cathedral last Tuesday, a team of archaeologists showed Roselyne Bachelot, France's culture minister, around the excavation site, explaining how they used a mini endoscopic camera to examine the body located within the lead sarcophagus, which was partially punctured. "We saw a very well-preserved body," Christophe Besnier, the lead archaeologist, said. "You can glimpse pieces of fabric, hair, and above all a pillow of leaves on top of the head, a well-known phenomenon when religious leaders were buried." Mr. Besnier added, "The fact that these plant elements are still inside means the body is in a very good state of conservation." While the identity of the body is unknown, preliminary findings suggest the coffin was made for a senior dignitary sometime in the 1300s. Some 400 bodies have been buried at Notre Dame since the 13th century, including bishops, archbishops, and canons. Archaeologists working at the site said the discoveries would help improve their understanding of funeral practices during the Middle Ages. Also unearthed was a piece of rood screen, an ornate partition that was a typical feature of medieval churches. The excavation, which began on February the 2nd, is being carried out by the Institute for Preventative Archaeological Research. The Culture Ministry has now agreed to extend the Institute's work until March the 25th, when renovations on the 850-year-old church are scheduled to continue. Pressure is growing for the church to be reopened. Emmanuel Macron, the French president, has set a strict deadline for 2024, when Paris will host the Summer Olympic Games. The 2019 fire, which was likely started by an electrical fault, wiped out the spire and the better part of the church's roof within about an hour. Remarkably, firemen were able to save the stone structure. More than 340,000 donations, totaling nearly 850 million euros, have been made since then to help with the restoration. But reconstruction efforts have been littered with controversy. In July 2020, Mr. Macron was forced to drop his suggestion to replace the 19th century spire designed by the French architect Viollet-le-Duc with a contemporary architectural gesture, following an outcry from purists who argued the cathedral should keep its traditional structure. Then in December 2021, a commission of heritage experts approved a controversial plan to partially modernize the cathedral's interior as part of the reconstruction, adding contemporary artworks and new lighting effects, much to the chagrin of critics who say the changes will disrupt the traditional design. A vicar accused of smashing her fiancé's glasses during a drunken row after their relationship soured during lockdown has been cleared of assault. The Reverend Michelle Bailey, 54, was accused of inflicting awful violence on then-partner Diane Shaw, 56, at the victim's bungalow. Last Friday, however, she was cleared of assault by beating and criminal damage after claiming she acted in self-defence. A court heard the Reverend Bailey had been staying with Miss Shaw in Stoke-on-Trent, Staffordshire, during the coronavirus lockdown, but their 10-month relationship had turned sour. Miss Shaw said that after getting stuck in long queues while shopping on the hot spring day, the Reverend Bailey became agitated when she returned home and the couple shared a bottle of wine over dinner. North Staffordshire Justice Centre heard that the Reverend Bailey began pacing round the bungalow, and when Miss Shaw tried to calm her down, the vicar bit her so hard she thought the flesh would come off. The Reverend Bailey, however, said she'd only had one glass of wine and Miss Shaw had drunk two bottles of red wine before starting on a third. The vicar said she poured the rest of the bottle down the sink and that was when the confrontation began. She told the court when she came back she realised the wine wasn't there. She got very angry. She locked the door, the front door. She'd taken the keys out of the lock. She stood up in front of me and there was an argument. The court heard the fight, which took place in May 2020, eventually spilled out into the front garden, where Miss Shaw claimed the vicar removed her glasses and smashed them quite deliberately. Acquitting the Reverend Bailey of all the charges, Marcus Waite, chair of the bench, said, "Overall, Miss Bailey's evidence remained closer to events than Miss Shaw's. I need to bear in mind Miss Bailey is of good character. The photos of the injuries support Miss Bailey's account. Miss Bailey acted out of self-defence. She is to be acquitted of the assault charge. She is also entitled to be acquitted of criminal damage." The Reverend Bailey has been suspended from a £40,000 a year job as priest in charge in the Diocese of Swansea and Brecon since the incident. The mother of three previously drew attention in a former parish in Stukeley, Buckinghamshire, after leaving her husband for a female bull breeder. In a blistering sermon, she likened her parishioners to a nest of vipers and accused them of breaking up her marriage with poisonous gossip. The Reverend Bailey was cleared of assault by beating and causing criminal damage. And finally, Pastor Jamie was being a little critical of his lovely wife and said to her, "You should embrace your mistakes." So she gave him a hug.
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.